Hello and welcome to episode 29 of The Sackdown. Today we've got our second repeating guest, and this is going to be a theme that we have on The Sackdown with some of our more interesting guests that are involved in the scene. We're not going to do the full Sackdown recaps where we go into their entire career. We do that on a previous episode, and we jump in at points that are crucial, like obviously Team Liquid. We have Spawn here, who just obviously went to First Stand, won North America in the Winter Split. We'll jump in with guests like this and kind of do a deep dive into the more current stuff as opposed to like the long history episode. So that's what we're going to do here right now. But more importantly, Spawn, I know you're in Australia right now. Tell us a little bit about how it is to wake up at this time and you know, first thing you see is my crackhead face.
I actually really enjoy the early morning wake ups, to be honest, and I think that I'm really lucky. I'm someone that easily changes their schedule, so it doesn't really bother me if one day I have to get up super early for a meeting or for a podcast. It doesn't bother me if I get to sleep in one day, and then it's all just about maximizing time with my family, to be honest. So I'm willing to sacrifice a couple of little things to make sure that when I get out of scrims, instead of going back and laying in my apartment, which I call the asylum in America, and laying in the asylum for the night, I get to, you know, lay down next to my beautiful partner and spend a couple of hours with my boys. So it's actually really nice to be in Australia at the moment.
Yeah. How do you negotiate going to sleep? Because I feel like that's the hardest part. Getting up is not the hard part for me, but eventually what ends up happening is, like, I'm somebody who also wakes up 3 a.m. similar to you. What happens is I start out going to sleep 7 p.m., 8 p.m., wake up at 3 a.m. And then over time, I realize that I'm going to sleep at like 11 p.m. or 12, and then I'm still waking up at 3. So how do you actually get to the point where you're sleeping early enough every single time?
So I'm really lucky. I have obviously two boys. They go to bed at 7 on the dot. So I go to bed at 7 on the dot every single day. And that's just a sleep schedule. As soon as they're in bed, I'm in bed. And, you know, if they negotiate a later sleep time, maybe I'm up for like half an hour. But how to actually get to sleep, I think, is a part that people struggle with a lot. People go to bed and then just toss and turn. At the moment, I'm going to gym and just trying to thrash my body a little bit and then get like 10, 15,000 steps up. I also just recently got a sauna, so I'm trying to sauna like 3 or 4 times a week. So just little things like that to help my sleep hygiene.
Okay. Interesting. Now, I was going to ask you, because what exact time do you end up working out? Because normally the way it works is like I end up going to the gym towards the end of my day, which makes it harder to sleep for me. So like I'll go to the gym at like, you know, 4:30, 5 p.m., like in the break that we have in between scrims, and then I'll come back. And I feel like that actually makes it more difficult. So do you go like earlier in the day, or how do you negotiate the gym routine?
Are we talking good scrim day, or are we talking about recent scrim day? Because in recent scrim day, all of my breaks are me sitting down and having one-on-ones with my players. But on an ideal scrim day, I would have, obviously, I would have just, you know, 3-0'd someone like Dignitas or Shopify or something like that, which is not happening at the moment. And then I would have a nice, juicy hour and 15-minute break for me to go to the gym. But because that's not happening at the moment, as soon as scrims are done, I just jump in the car and go to the gym. Like last game, Nessix explodes. I'm like, Rainover or Swiffer, you got this. I have absolute faith in you for this review. I'm out. I got to go move some things.
Sounds good. No,
it's a very unique scenario because it's like I have worked like remotely, but it has always been like insanely, the idea of it is so frustrating. And both of you like work remotely, but in very different capacities. It's like you're helping strategically, right, Dom? And Spawn, you're working as a head coach remotely. Like I thrive on seeing how people like their body language and so forth and the energy.
You need some cameras, Yamada. You need some cameras.
You need to spy on your player, Spawn, Perma, and everything.
Oh, we got some cameras at C9. The problem is we need to up the quality, because right now it'll be like 144p and I'll be like, Loki, what do you think about this? And then Blabber will be like, that's me, bro. I'm not Loki. And I'm like, I swear to God, I just can't see the pic. I am not racist. I just can't see the fucking pixels. Jesus. All right. Like, please give me a better fucking camera, C9. That's all I'm asking for.
Your camera's great, Spawn. How does it work to work remotely as a head coach? Tell me about the hardships and how different it is. Because the energy, like, you have to feed off the energy somehow, no?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that sometimes as a head coach, you would know this as well, is that even when you're live, you have to kind of artificially like come into a review happy that you would normally be angry at, because you can feel your players at tipping point, or a review where like, you know, everything's going fine, but it's been going fine for a couple of weeks. So, you know, maybe you got to try and spice things up a little bit. So what I would find is that the planning aspect of the day is much harder, because a lot of your planning as a League of Legends head coach, I was pretty structured, but I would say I'm not as structured like in the past as I am now, because like you got to make sure that like it's not like you're catching your other coaches in the hallway or you're catching Core at breakfast to talk about the draft or something like that. It's like, no, I need to book like all of these meetings out really, really deliberately. I can't catch people in the hallways at all. So I would say that's changed a little bit. And then I would say from a motivation point of view, like I think for the players, having me there in person and feeling my presence and all those other things gives them an extra, you know, like 5%. And I think we saw that going into playoffs. And unfortunately, that's just not there. So we're both getting used to it. It's been a little bit of a challenge for me. But I would say I'm a very motivated person. I've got a very big work ethic. And this is something that I told Steve and Dodo when they said that I could do it, that I would make work. So now just 110% of my energy goes into making it work.
Yeah, I'm surprised you say 5%, because I felt like it was more like 50% or like 60% of like player performance. I mean, it went from Teal just looking bad to Teal looking like the best team in North America the second you got there. So I think you got to tell us a little bit more about like, what is the secret sauce? Like, are you just the umpty whisperer? Because that's the main thing that I noticed. Like when you were not there, umpty is fucking running it down 12 deaths. He's setting records for playing the worst League of Legends jungle game that we have ever seen. And when you get there, he's just like winning the split. So are you the umpty whisperer? What is the sauce?
I think, you know, umpty and I have a really good relationship. And I would say I have a pretty good relationship with all of my players, but I think that it's different when you import a player for the first time into a country and like you're the person that's taking them out for dinner. And, you know, you're the person that's listening to them about like being homesick or missing their family. It's a little bit different getting someone like an Impact that already has his life set up and everything, even though he's not from LA originally. Like he's got everything there. So when you bring someone over, it creates a special bond. I made a point to like be the person that took umpty out a lot and be the person that talked to him. So whilst Rainover talks to him about the game strategically, I'm sure he probably does see me as like a little bit of an uncle figure or something like that, like someone that he can go to when the game is hard. And then also what I will say is that we have some like really big personalities on the team, like strong personalities. Impact's a strong personality. Core's a strong personality. Umpty's not really a super strong personality, but he has some ideas about the game that are pretty good. And when good idea meets strong personality, sometimes the good idea needs a little bit of a force behind it. And I would say I am that force behind a lot of the good ideas on the team that meet the strong personalities. So I would say they're probably the two things. And then also, I think that there was a little bit of luck involved. I think that we were really struggling with like our vision of the game. And then when you get into high pressure moments, it creates alignment. And I think that I just happened to arrive at like one of the tipping points where we needed to get aligned. And honestly, our scrims were even shit when I was there. And then like 2 days into it, I just sat down to the team and I was like, you guys don't even want to win. You're playing like three different games on the map. Like, I just can't believe as a head coach that we're having a conversation after like 13 months of how we're going to get unified and like play behind one goal. And then two people went and had one-on-ones and then they came back and they're like, fuck it, we've decided we want to win. And then we showed up and we just started playing good League of Legends again.
Try to make your team win. That's actually some pretty good advice. Why don't we do that with Ruddy Sack the first time, Yamato?
No, kind of.
It looked
no
like stick. We didn't want to win either. Like, let me tell you, like I'm actually convinced that we actually didn't want to win. So what's the difference?
I actually had this conversation with players. Like, would you rather? And it's one of the questions I ask when I interview players. Like, would if the roster was like if you play in the LPL. Would you rather be the best player on a middling roster, or would you rather be the janitor on the team that wins? Because you need some of both. It sounds bad, but you need some people that want to play well because they want to play well, and you need some people that are willing to pick up shit to win a game of League of Legends. And if you have too many one or the other, I call them CEOs. If you have too many CEOs and not enough janitors, then your team does not function in the current state of League of Legends.
So umpty is a janitor. Is that what you're telling us? You know, well, I just wanted to add, you know, because umpty, yeah. Obviously, it's like I co-stream, Dom co-streams. I think it's a player that gets heavily criticized. And I think from what we see, of course, rightfully so. But all your players are doing a good job of like defending. I saw APA said nobody's replaceable on this team. He wouldn't change anything. I think that's cool. But what would you say your justification is for getting on? Because umpty, even last year, World Championship was looking rough. There were moments, mm-hmm. as for example, EWC, you guys had moments where you could clutch it out. I think in the series against Inspired as well, there was a lot of catching mm-hmm. up to do in terms of the jungle position. How can you convince me and Dom, who are avid umpty haters of his gameplay, of course?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things here. So you need to like break it down and tackle it like step by step. So has Umpty failed in the clutch a couple of times? Like, you know, there's MSI on the Lee Sin game where we're playing Samira, and then there's the Maokai game where we're at EWC where we should have probably beaten T1. We're up like 6,000 gold or something at the time. Huh. Those plays, I think, are just experience plays. And now everyone's going to be like, but Umpty has so much experience. You can't say that. And it's like, well, actually, in big moments, Umpty has zero experience.
Yeah.
Like, the guy was perennial playoff misser before he got to Team Liquid. And so what he was, however, was he was a leader in his team. So then in those big moments, he wanted to be one of the people on Bro that stepped up and actually had those big moments. And my job as a head coach was to convince him to take a new role. And this is where it comes in, Dom. I think that when Umpty joined Team Liquid, he saw himself as like a star jungler on a bad team. And I convinced him to become a role player on what I was going to hope was going to be a successful team. And he embraced that role because he enjoyed winning. And now what I think we've seen is a little bit of an overcorrection. So those moments happen, and I care about them as a coach, but I think they're coachable moments. The moments to me that aren't coachable are the moments where he loses to Inspired and everyone else's takeaway from the game is, hey, we need to play better as carries, you know, Yon and APA, and we need to, you know, the people that are not deliberately falling behind, but falling behind due to the game plan need to actually continue to do their job 5% better. But I'm never expecting Umpty to out carry Inspired, because Umpty's job on our team is much different to Inspired's job on FlyQuest. But Umpty's takeaway from that was, wow, I need to out carry Inspired. So then you have people changing positions, and you know, I'm like the guy that sits on top of the board, and then I have my janitor, Umpty, trying to promote himself to a CFO because he won a title. And it's like, well, that's great. You won Janitor of the Year, but that doesn't mean you get to control the books. You know, there's still Yon's books.
Umpty is Janitor of the Year. That's the title right there.
He still gets to control the books. So what I would say is, like, you need people to buy into their role and doing their role 10% better.
Yeah.
Too often in League of Legends, when stuff is going wrong, people start trying to do other people's jobs. You know, you have players that are starting to try and draft. You have players that are trying to resolve conflict. You have coaches that are sitting down playing the game and trying to figure out the new meta and stuff like that. No, like when you're in a bad position, you just need the people to do their job like 5 or 10% better, because that's all the difference is in pro sport. Like if we play 5% worse against the Lion or Shopify, we will lose on stage. Like they're not so bad that they cannot beat us. But if we play 5% better, like we did in playoffs, then we can beat everyone too. So I guess that's like what my justification of Umpty right now. But I will say I really disagree with APA's quote. And I think I'm pretty public about this. Everyone on Team Liquid is replaceable. I'm replaceable. You know, when I thought, you know, Team Liquid hadn't won a title for like, what, 4 years, 5 years or something like that before I became head coach again. And I won split one, went undefeated in split two. And when I gave the news to Dodo and Steve that I wanted to reduce work reduced hours, 100% they thought about replacing me. It's just, there's no world that that's not the case. But what I will say is I currently feel like and felt like at the start of the year that I had the best talent available to run my team. But that does not mean that I am not constantly looking at talent to upgrade my team. And all of the players know that. And that means they have to come in every day and work hard, because the only way you can have confidence that you are currently the best talent is if you have someone out there looking for more talent to fill in. And then you get the knowledge as a player, like, hey, my coach actually likes me because he's keeping me around. Not, hey, my coach is actually really lazy, and if I lose three more games and have a bad offseason, then I'm gone at the blink of an eye.
It is time to talk about something that is so, so important. You know, as people, you know, often we live lifestyles where we sit at home and we're in our own vicinity and we can't keep track of what kind of an effect we can have on people when we finally meet them in person. But fear no longer. You just need to add a very, very simple step to your routine to have no more fears and to be brimming with confidence. Obviously, I'm talking about Mando. You never know when you're going to be in a situation, maybe you're on the train and it's very tight packed and you have to hold on and your armpit is right there. And then all of a sudden you cross eyes with what could potentially be the love of your life and you're just attacking that person with stank. That would be horrible. That would be so, so terrible. But of course, Mando has got you covered. They have a whole body deodorant. Any circumstance that you're in, you can apply it to your grundle, to your pits, to, of course, your nutsack, wherever you want. Because if people are in the vicinity of these things, the best thing that you can leave them with is a good first impression. And that is, of course, how you smell. You know already that I smell like Mount Fuji. There's a bunch of very, very nice scents that you can add, of course, into your routine. It's paraben-free. It is, of course, baking soda free. That belongs in pastry goods, not in your deodorant. This is, of course, developed by a doctor who just realized, damn, everyone is out here treating and misdiagnosing BO just the wrong way completely. So, of course, Mando, whole body deodorant, has got you covered for 72 hours. So what are you waiting for? Mando Starter Pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice, like the mini body wash or, of course, the deodorant wipes. So you can freshen up on the go if you're ever in that circumstance, you know, if you are on a bender, you know, and you all of a sudden wake up hangover style. Obviously, you need to figure out where you left your keys in your wallet and what you're doing in Mike Tyson's bathtub, but at least you'll smell good. And of course, free shipping with this starter pack that I mentioned. As a special offer for all the listeners of the Sackdown, new customers get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack. Use code TSD at shopmando.com. That is shopmando.com. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Smell fresher, stay drier, and boost your confidence from head to toe with Mando. Thank you very much, Mando.
So I think this is probably a good segue right here to talk about the potential of replacing some of the talent. And this is something that obviously, you know, talked to you before. I asked if this was okay. And you said this would be an interesting thing to talk about here. And, you know, other people obviously know because people have scrimmed Team Liquid. And you guys have ran some scrims with different players on the roster. So what have been like the goals of trying this? Is this like just trying to see where everyone's at? Is it more of what you just talked about here? Like where exactly have you landed with the idea of trying some players after first stand?
Yeah, I mean, after first stand, we sat down and we had a look at the mistakes we were making, and we found it very difficult to tell whether they were individual mistakes or whether they were team mistakes and communication mistakes. So the easiest way to start identifying these problems is actually by swapping people in and out of the roster. And that's what we've been doing, is we've been playing some scrims, you know, with substitute junglers, some scrims with substitute mid laners. And the ultimate goal from my perspective isn't to make a roster change immediately, but it's if I was going to make a roster change, what would that impact be on my team? And I think that you have to be very, very careful about this and how you go about it, because sometimes just even changing people in and out can ruin people's mood and mentality. And, you know, obviously we've been triple blocking every day to make sure that our current lineup has enough practice together, but we're still giving the people trying out a fair shot. And I don't think we're going to make a decision before split two starts, to be completely honest. But as of right now, we've reduced the candidates that are trying out on the team because some people that we were interested in are just not at the level that we need them to be. So we gave them a whole bunch of feedback, and, you know, maybe they'll even come back in a couple of weeks and have a couple more games just so I can keep an eye on them. But this is kind of how I've always operated, to be honest. Like, I mean, as you guys know, because you've spoken to me, I'm way more like sports team oriented than this. Like, you have a bad game, in an ideal world, I have a person sitting behind you on the bench that I can bring in and sub for you. It's why I love being the academy coach the whole time, and why I used to fight so hard for people like Jan, like Mir, to actually have a game in the LCS, because, you know, we were winning back then and they weren't getting that opportunity. So I like to provide that opportunity and think it makes the ecosystem better, and hopefully it lights a fire up some of my players' ass.
Yeah, do you think it has done that? Because I can say, as somebody who's watched the scrims, I feel like the results of like the main team lineup from when like you guys first came back from first stand to now, after like people subbed in and out, I feel like you guys are actually playing a lot better because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say like what it does is it teaches you what you miss about your old teammates. I mean, we're having the joke afterwards, like someone would go for a play and I'll be like, why do you hate Umpty? Like, you know, why are you going for this individual player as opposed to doing the team thing? and like covering his camps. And then you substitute jungle and like everyone's trying to protect the jungler because like, you know, you want him to have an enjoyable experience of scrimming with an LCS team. It's like, don't worry, bro. You don't even need to say it. I got you. I know these camps are important. I'm going to defend them for you, right? But defending Umpty's camps for the 500th times or protecting the sub jungler's camps for the first time feels a little bit different. I would say like we have actually taken some good experience away from it. And I would say motivation is very high at the moment. In fact, I canceled a night block last night because I felt like the players were just getting burnt out. We haven't had a day off. We've been triple blocking. And I got yelled at by two of my players. And then they were like, is this a vote? And I was like, since when's my team being a vote? I'm the head coach. Like, get off your fucking PCs and go do something else, you degenerates. And like Young was full like keyboard worrying me. Like, you know, we're not even close to burnt out. And I'm like, yeah, but dude, it's also not even week one yet. Like we got to, this is a marathon, not a sprint. But I would say it has definitely helped the team right now. But sometimes it's hit and miss. I knew doing this that it was a risk. And like I was like, well, as soon as you even mention making a change, you have to be willing to blow stuff up. But we were so unhappy with how we did it first stand and the attitude of the team behind the scenes, which you guys saw a glimmer of, that, you know, that was a chance I was willing to take.
Yeah. No, it's funny to hear you say that because I'm obviously on the other side of things where every time one of like the, like if Blabber dies or if Loki dies or something, they're like, do you just fucking hate APA? Do you hate Umpty? Like, do you just want them to lose their jobs? Like what the fuck? Like, what's wrong with you? Why are you running it down here? So it's actually funny to hear from other side, but I guess that's just pro player culture. You know, they'll try to find the humor in you know, whatever the situation is. Yeah. I thought it was an interesting point you made about Umpty because I mean, obviously when I stream, I'm very, you know, harsh with my words. So what I said about Umpty is that he was like too much of a loser, meaning that he like lost too much in his career. And when you lose so much, it's like, it's almost like it's hard to not sabotage yourself and like accept a win. It just feels like you don't know how to win because you've lost so much. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the issue that I saw with him in those big moments, is it felt like he just didn't know how to win games because he didn't have this experience winning. Was this like kind of in the same vein as what you said before?
Yeah, absolutely. What I will say is like, League of Legends is a unique game. When you get the playing field starts even, well, it doesn't because of draft, but in the ideal world, you get a 50-50 draft. And then as you start winning, the playing field starts tilting. So it actually becomes easier to kick more goals. Like if you just put the ball in the middle of the pitch again, it rolls back into the goal, like when you're ahead, and then it keeps tilting. And what I will say is that a lot of what Umpty has learned over his career is how to close out a game from an even or slightly behind state, which involves increasing risk. As opposed to when you're 6,000 gold ahead, the best way to close out a game is actually to reduce risk and maintain your gold lead. And then the game just ends itself. So what I will say is like, I absolutely agree with you. This is a conversation I've had with Umpty many a times. And I also think it is a little bit of his personality. He's an upbeat, like energetic kind of guy. And I think that there is a time and a place for that. His creativity in the early game is like a symptom of his personality is what I would say. But yeah, definitely towards the end of games, especially games that we're ahead in, behind the scenes, he's a big believer in that, but it takes time to turn it around, which is why I also don't believe, by the way, when people are like, he's been a pro player for 8 years, he's never getting better. It's like, yeah, but he's been a pro player in this environment for 1 year, you know, and you can learn new things at that point. And again, it's not like I'm sitting here defending Umpty. Like, you know, as we've already discussed, it's not like I'm not willing to try out junglers. It's just that as a coach, I can't ignore the good things he does for the teams as well, because that's unfair. But I definitely acknowledge that, especially recently, there's been some absolutely shocking games. And, you know, they're equally my fault. You know, it's split ones over now. Yeah, split ones over now. But we had like an 85% win rate on Vi and scrims. Like, it was, like, just hands down our best champion. And I don't know if it's because he's playing a little bit looser in scrims and, like, you know, when you're fighting and stuff and you're moving nicely and you're not, like, all, like, rigid, like, then your decision-making is a little bit better. You see the game a little bit clearer. But on stage, his Vi was not looking good. But I would be like, okay, that was a bad stage game. Let's run it, like, three more times in scrims. Like, I'm not going to run it every scrim game, but, like, three more times. All right, cool. We're still winning, like, 85% of our games. Let's give it another shot on stage. Like, all right, fuck. Like, didn't work again, you know? And you kind of get caught in a loop because Vi is such an important champion in the meta. It helps Impact's champion pool. It helps Ian, APA's champion pool. So you want to be able to play it. He wants to be able to play it to show that it was just a bad game. And then you get kind of stuck in this crap cycle. And then eventually you need someone that's brave that says, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. And I have a couple of players that they do that themselves. Like Impact is the guy. He'll be like, I want to try this. And if it works in scrims, he'll want to play it on stage. And then if he has a bad stage games, he's so experienced and so good at knowing himself whether this is going to happen again or whether it was a one-off fluke thing that he'll like call it. He'll be like, I don't want to play this champion anymore. Or, you know, give it to me again and I'll play better. Whereas for people like Umpty, I probably have to be the person that calls that because he's a little bit more emotionally invested in it. And I just have done a bad job this split of doing that for him, to be honest.
It reminded me of that MLXG meme, the way that you like described everything. It's like when Umpty's ahead, he thinks he like should engage because it's like so easy to win. When Umpty's even, he thinks that like the game is like on the brink of being blown open, so he engages. Like when he's slightly behind, he thinks that he can come back so he can. And then it's like when he's losing super hard, he goes for the engage because he thinks that it's the only hope to get back in. So now, nice, we've got MLXGs. I mean, honestly, that's a lot of junglers, to be honest. A lot of junglers have the MLXG mindset, so I like that. I thought you had something you wanted to say here, Yamato.
No, I was intrigued because like we had Spawn before, of course, the World Championship post MSI and so forth. And, you know, I wanted to ask, you mentioned that like in terms of how you were at first stand and also maybe in the split, in terms of your preparation and takeaway, considering you're running back the same roster, what was some of the adjustments you guys needed to make and what were some things that you guys wanted to improve on as a group? Because obviously the year was very successful. You won, of course, spring. You were competitive. And then the finals, you guys lost it. And then I think you can argue, of course, about the World Championship losing to FlyQuest must have been a pain point too. What were the adjustments that you wanted to make coming into this year specifically?
Yeah, so the adjustments we wanted to make and the adjustments we did make were two very different things. So like, let's talk through it. So one of the adjustments I wanted to make is that obviously I wanted the same, if not a very similar roster, because I feel like we'd done so much of the hard work. But then I wanted people to go away and we'd build a really solid foundation, but I needed people to open up their champion pools and do a couple of other like really basic things. Like APA came in. And he was a player that played the map really wide and he wouldn't really care about his individual status within the game because the way he had won games historically was by playing the map really well. Then he played against people like Cream, people like Chovy, and it's like, if you can't get past laning phase, Caps was someone that taught us this really harshly, by the way. If you can't succeed laning phase and get to mid game where you're strong enough to like push your side lane, you don't even get the opportunity to run around the map. You're stuck to like a little corner in the map that they put you in. Otherwise they kill you repetitively. So, you know, he got really good at laning phase, but in getting good at laning phase, he sacrificed some of his mid game habits that I first thought was great. Then we had a whole big thing about team fighting that we wanted to get way better at team fighting. This was supposed to be like our team fighting year. We were so happy with how our early game was going and our creativity in the mid game, but we were really unhappy with our team fighting. We felt like we just did not stand up team fighting well at all. So there was a couple of like big takeaways. And then I think what the players went away and did is they went away and did their own kind of analysis. And, you know, you give players goals, but they set them themselves and they changed a couple of things. And I think a couple of players just missed with their goals, to be honest. I think they tried to change things that probably didn't need to be changing. Then you come back to the team and it's not as cohesive as it was. And then you're spending a lot of time trying to put it back together. So I would say that's what we tried to do. Did we actually do it? Probably not. But, you know, happens. We'll just keep building.
And as a follow-up, because you mentioned like first stand was like a period where you guys weren't happy, in terms of like the snippet that we saw, right, was the confrontation between APA and
which Eon, was like the most tame snippet.
I thought oh, that's great, you know.
It's like, yeah, same.
I thought it was fantastic. I was like, this is good. It's like you need players to speak up, you know. If people are fucking angry about something, call people out, because I always believe that when it comes from your teammate is the best place to come. If a coach doesn't need to say it, it's better, you know. So you mentioned that it was like a tough time, the first stand, in terms of like the tournament and so forth. Can you elaborate more on what the hardships were?
Yeah, absolutely. I think going into first stand, we actually felt like we'd finally regained some of our form and that people were back to playing their roles and that they were doing a good job. And then I think what actually happened is we played against KC and everyone thought the tournament was over for some reason, because like we played pretty well against KC. If you go back and watch those games, they're games that we can definitely be proud of. And then KC lost to Flying Oyster and we're like, well, fantastic. Like, this is great. Europe's out. We're going to get through like second, third seed, something like this. And then the game versus TES was really important to us. And I can explain why for a couple of different reasons. So one, we were a bad team that won spring last year. And then we were a good team that lost summer. And what happened was we were a pretty poor team. And then we figured out a little bit of the meta, like double dragons. If you guys remember what we were running back then, it was like Smolder Acehole. Then we got Core back on range supports and we're just playing like really heavily through bottom lane. And Impact was just doing a huge job of like, somehow this guy on weak side was like getting push and like maintaining like 2v1 and like taking plates in like spring. And we were just like playing so heavily through bottom lane and just smashing people in bottom lane. And when we played FlyQuest, every single game was literally like, did Yon or Masu get ahead? And whoever got ahead was just going to run the whole game. So that's like not a great way to play League of Legends. There's no strategic diversity here, by the way, guys. It's just like the same thing over and over again. And so when we went to MSI, we played against TES and they like taught us a lesson. It was like, no, you cannot play this way. You know, I remember Jackie loved Bernie's flash, but was like strong enough. Like Bernie's flash like killed us, but he was strong enough to maintain push and he just refused to hit our turret. Like over and over again, this guy would just like push and like walk back into lane and like go into the front brush or push and go to pixel and push. And like he just was giving us no openings in the game about how to play the game. And then meanwhile, Cream was running around like a maniac with his flash up and like drawing all of our attention. And they were just building such big leads. And so what actually happened from that is I was very proud of how we took it. We went down and we sat away and we looked at those games like over and over and over again, like at MSI. And within the space of like 4 days, that made us a better team. And so like we call them our dads, even internally. It's like, yeah, dad taught us how to like play League of Legends at MSI. And so then what happened at last stand is we were...
First stand.
Last strike, whatever.
It's not the last stand. Maybe it's the last stand for you. But
maybe it was for me. Maybe that's psychologically. What happened is we just really wanted to show the world that we were not the team that they beat last year. And then unfortunately, the exact same team that they beat last year showed up. And I think it really upset some people on the squad. And we just didn't do a good job of bouncing back. Like we tried to take the similar lessons. We tried to take the similar takeaways. But when you've done it for a second time in a row, to some people, it just wasn't good enough. And that's fine. That is what it is. But I don't think we did a good job of mentally recovering from that, to be honest.
Yeah. What was your evaluation of Top Esports at the tournament? Because obviously they beat you guys, but they lost literally every other game that they played the entire time. So most people think that they're shit. Like, but I mean, from watching them in LPL, it's like, I know they're not shit. Like there's definitely like they're dealing with their own mental problems. So what was your takeaway having to watch them play? Because it must be like really weird to just be like, they beat us. They feel good, but then you watch them play and it's like, what the fuck are they doing in the other games?
Yeah, well, it's really funny because the reason they have an easy job beating us, I think, is because they have like a very similar team makeup as we do and then just slightly better players in every role. So our teamwork needs to be better than them to beat them. And that's kind of our evaluation of them as a team. And I think that that's pretty much what you saw. And then in areas much like us where they're playing against stronger players in other lanes and in form, they also get punished very, very heavily. And what I will say is we're better at losing than TES is at losing. They're, even in the LPL, they're like this. They're like a go next fast team. They'll give it a red hot go for a couple of team fights, but then they'll shut up shop and that's them done. And what I would say is their top half of the map just did not hold up the way you expect their top half of the map to hold up. And then their bottom half of the map didn't get the leads that you're used to seeing out of their bottom half of the map. And when two things are failing at the same time, it looks really bad. I would say that if I was going to diagnose it as like a pundit as opposed to a coach, and I would hate for someone to do this about my team, but I would say there's definitely something going on there winner's mindset wise. Like it felt like, you know, if you have a winner's mindset, if you're ahead or behind, you see a clear path to win the game. It felt like when they were ahead, they had a clear path to win the game. But as soon as they were behind, they couldn't see a clear path to win the game. And so they were getting very desperate very quickly. And desperation in League of Legends, especially in the current meta, hurts. And then the last thing I'll say is much like us, they're actually pretty fluid around the map if you watch them in LPL. And I would say the lane swap changes and things like that probably hurt us and TES equally as hard. Because, you know, when they're not able to fluidly move around the map the way you would see or have the ability to late invade topside or things like this, it does take away some strategic diversity in the game, I would say. And I've been pretty unhappy with it. I know you've been vocal too, Dom, but it's like when you've been playing the game this way for a year and then it gets changed on a 2-week notice. Like I say this all the time. Like what if people, I think we lane swapped 80% of our games and then Riot took it away from us with zero notice. Like, what did people think was going to happen before the international tournament? Like, we were always going to struggle in that aspect of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just weird because from a person that's been around in League of Legends specifically for such a long time, and I've been in esports for a longer time than that, it just feels like Riot is so anti-strategy as a company compared to other companies. Like, if you look at Dota, you'll have ridiculous strategies, but it feels like every single time that there has been a unique strategy that has hit competitive play, whether it be like the support top roaming bullshit, or funnel being in the game, or lane swaps, whatever it is, they will always just try to nerf it out of the game. Garen, Yuumi, Sona, Taric, they'll just nerf it until it's not viable anymore. So the idea is, the objective is not balance. The objective is to make the game look the way that they envision the game as much as possible. So like, that's something that I feel like is kind of boring when you watch so many of the same games. But yeah, I just wanted to know what your take is on that, because this is something that I discuss pretty often on my stream. Like, I think that Riot is generally anti-strategy.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it's actually a really big pain point for me, and something that I've talked about a lot, because like, I want to find a way to break the way the game is currently being played. And I think that by removing lane swaps, like, you remove such a powerful tool that existed in the past. It's like, playing against Zayas without lane swaps is miserable. Like, this guy is so good one-on-one. He's going to always like counterpick in the most greedy way possible. And then historically as well, he's had a very good jungler sitting behind him, backing up this, and a team that buys into protecting him and like maintaining his leads. Playing against him when there was lane swaps, by the way, was still really hard. He was playing Zeri in lane swaps. We were playing Cassante in lane swaps. And this guy was still ahead in mid game. So it's not, it wasn't like it was a shutdown Zayas and like you just win the game. They were still really good at protecting him and getting him his leads. But playing him without lane swaps is just, you know, it's a whole different kettle of fish. And I want the ability as a coach to be able to pull certain levers to be able to give my team an advantage. And I want that advantage to be from level one. I don't want it to be from level four the way it currently is. And I think that they could have nerfed it. Don't get me wrong. I wish they had kept playing around with it. And, you know, in the past, I've played things like Senna, Yasuo, bottom lanes into really oppressive lanes, because it's really hard to, like, push Senna, Yasuo out of lane. Back when Iceborne Gauntlet, Blade of the Ruined King was a Yasuo build, and it was just completely OP. Like, I've done stuff like this to try and get similar edges, but I just hate when they take an option away from you without giving you another viable strat. It's like, okay, this guy is a lane bully, counterpick top laner. What strat have I got to now beat him? It's like, okay, blind pick the strongest laner you can possibly pick. I'm just picking Jace every game when I play against Zayas, and just hoping that my top laner can play Jace and stand up to him. Kind of feels shit.
I just think that a lot of times you just end up in like very like cookie cutter ways to play. It's like, okay, we drafted this, which means that like, all right, we're going to like level one invade in order to like get info. And then if we like in level one invade, then we can split the map. And then if we split the map, then we can dive bot lane. And it just feels like, like not very skilled or like not very interesting, I guess, from my perspective. Like, there's this conception, or there's this like misconception in the community where they say that lane swaps are, well, I mean, I guess it's not a misconception because it's what people really believe. Maybe that's a wrong way to phrase it. But people say that lane swaps are just more boring to watch. But to me, I feel like a lot of the games that we watched without lane swaps were significantly more boring. Like when we had that like Zeri, Yuumi versus like Lucian, Nami versus Aphelios, Lulu meta, or like whatever it was, like Sivir, Lulu, whatever. But when we had these trades all the time, it's like nothing was happening in the game. Everyone is just going and farming until a certain point, and then the AD carry and the support go mid, and then it's just like you're just playing the game out and looking for like one fight. And that was when I felt like we had the most stalemates, where people would be like LCK Bej and it'd be 22 minutes and there'd be one kill. I actually felt like there was more action that was created by lane swaps than some of the metas that we had previously. So even in terms, if you just look at like how many kills a game there are, like you've seen kills go down with the removal of lane swaps because less stuff is happening. And this is even though they've made Ruinous Otacon appear more, right? So with Ruinous Otacon appearing more, then you don't have the GA, which means that like if you consider how many champions actually go down in the game, there's just less action overall. So for me, I think it's pretty interesting to see how like viewers view things. And my conclusion was just that viewers don't actually know what they want. Like they hate lane swaps because they think that they hate lane swaps. But if they go back to like things that are significantly more boring. Zeri, Yumi, Lucian, Nami, I don't think they're going to sit there and be like, wow, this is fucking amazing. We get to watch them play like 2v2. You're not really watching people play 2v2 because when there's that many like practiced matchups, obviously with Fearless, it solves it to some degree. Mm-hmm. But the reality of the situation is that people just know how to like trade. Like eventually you just watch some VODs of like better laners than you and you get things down to like a pretty similar level.
It's not even that. It's Fearless was really good at the start, and I hope it continues to stay good. But I think that what we're seeing now a lot of the time in Fearless is that people just handshake stuff. So it's like, okay, if they leave up Varus, we're going to leave up Kalista and we'll handshake that matchup. And then if they don't, then it's going to be like they leave up MF and we're going to handshake Ezreal. And then we're going to handshake that matchup. So people are opting into matchups like very often. I think in like pro play at the moment, it's like, okay, you give us Gwen and we'll give you Rumble or Jace. And then like, you know, handshake, that's the game one matchup. And then, you know, and I hope that it moves away from that a little bit. I think that what people hope like with Fearless, like I heard it all the time. It's like, you know, you get to game five Fearless and then you get to throw five bans at an AD carry and you see what this guy can play with like the ninth best AD carry in the game. Like stuff like that, I think is like romanticized and a pipe dream. I really do think that until you get to best of fives in Fearless, you're not really seeing all that much strategic diversity. If you play two or three games, people have got it figured out now. We've been scrimming for too long.
So how did you feel about, you know, coaching in game fours and game fives in Fearless Draft?
Still haven't played
gotcha!
One, brother.
We haven't done any of them yet in North America. Well done. That was like a little little idea there. You know, people are going to think that I'm an idiot for asking that question. But no, it's just a little joke
at
about
least,
how terrible our format is.
Do them now. Unless you get to do them now in the next 3 weeks. Never mind. You're playing BO1s.
BO1s.
Hey, I want Fearless.
It's better than what the format was. You know, at least it feels better to be playing more games now. So we'll take it, I guess. I don't know about you, but I like to keep my money where I can see it. Unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers also seem to like keeping my money. After years of overpaying for wireless, I finally got fed up with crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and free perks that actually cost more in the long run, and switched to Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk to text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile at $15 a month. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/sackdown. That's mintmobile.com/sackdown. Upfront payment of $45 for a 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for the first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Now, I just wanted to add, you know, on the point of it's like these limiting changes, because I did think, like, in terms of the timing to remove lane swap was atrocious. Like, I think this is probably like top one worst patch ever in preparation for like an international, because like the most extreme one people think about is like 2015 Juggernauts. That was still like people had a month time to learn how Mordekaiser works. And maybe ban it and not give it to TSM to lose as an LPL team against a North American team in group stages, right? It's like there was, at least there was a little bit of time. But in terms of this tournament, I imagine that everyone had like horrible logistics to deal with. And you've been at all of the tournaments. You were EWC, MSI, Worlds. And in terms of the impact of logistics and like planning of it, what has stood out to you as like the worst aspects that feel like outside of your control? I imagine this one's like, how a life, you get to play at the same studio as always. It must be fucking easy breezy for you. You don't need to move. You have the same office. From your side, what are some of the frustrations of like the logistics that teams don't, I mean, viewers don't see in terms of dealing and preparing for internationals?
So what I will say is like, we don't really mind about the home court advantage thing because to be honest, like we probably won split one due to a home court advantage. So like what I mean by that is we have an office in Brazil. Everyone else went to this Riot hotel. We're in our facility, which is like amazing. It's like 32 story building in the middle of Sao Paulo. And we've got rooms there that are beautiful and catered lunches. And our scrim room was like fantastic. And then I'm just hearing that these guys are like in crummy rooms and like having to go to the studio to practice and scrim during the day. So like we definitely facility did get split one. So I'm not going to be the person that sits here and be like, yeah,
I'm happy HLA, you actually say that.
It was in Korea.
Because we felt the same, like just even just being in that room, like we couldn't even set up like a camera. We couldn't even like hear the players. Like I'm remote coaching. I can't even like hear the players. It's like, is there any like way to solve this? Like, no, not really. We don't have any of our own equipment and stuff. So it was like, it was pretty miserable in split one. So.
And what I will say is that G2 are the best team in the world when they go to a Riot hotel of like figuring out. They have a separate room that they always get for their coaches and they do a like whole bunch of things logistically to make it really good. So like I pick Romain's brain every single time we go internationally. I'm like, what are you guys doing this time? What's this? What's this? And then like, you know, we have a chat about it.
What did they do at first event?
unfortunately, my gym partner
these are fast ones. Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, in saying that, logistically, first down was bad. Okay, so why was it bad? The patch dropped like immediately afterwards, and then we had to fly. There was no real option for us to go straight to Korea because like things just weren't set up in time, and the patch was on a really awkward time. So we had to go back to LA, LA back to Korea, which is like just not good. And then what I will say is the only thing that tilted me about first down, because we're all in a shit playing field. No one really acknowledged how much lane swaps hurt us was the first thing that annoyed me. And then KC fans telling me that I beat a jet lag team that got there like 2 days before, because we all got there the exact same day. And I got there a day later.
So, damn.
Yeah. I thought you guys had some free time. I thought you guys boot camped a little bit, bro. Maybe I spread this like message. Content.
We did zero boot camping. We stayed in Brazil. We did content for 3 days, 4 days, like as you guys probably saw from all the stuff we were putting out. I know the C9 guys were at our office, so they can attest to it. And then we had to, as I said, we had to do like a flight back across like the most brutal time zone. By the way, people say flying like left to right in the world is really brutal. What's actually really brutal is flying up, down to up in the world. It's actually very, very hard to do. So we had to do that. And it was just, it was a shit show everywhere. So then we came in like super jet lag, super annoyed. EWC was the only one that was like that. But the best thing about EWC is there was no home court advantage. So like when you went into the player lounges at EWC, like we had arrived like 18 hours or 19 hours before we played, like you see Impact like sleep on the couch, but then you look over the way and you actually see like Oscar like asleep on the couch too. It's like, well, good. I have a jet lag tough later. They have a jet lag tough later. Like, no one's going to be playing any figure champions, I guess, in this game. But yeah, it was a brutal change from the patch and the turnaround time. But everything else was beautiful. I love going to Korea. It's really nice to be able to walk around in Korea and just feel safe and feel welcome and everything. And people are super nice. And it was a good event. But yeah, just a little bit brutal in terms of how long we had to prepare.
Yeah. Did you like the format? Did you want another tiebreaker against Casey?
we didn't deserve a tiebreaker. Like, I think I tweeted it. Like when we played like that, like I don't think anyone in my team was under the illusion that we deserved a tiebreaker. So yeah, we started well, ended shit. So we went out first, and I hope every single one of my players goes to bed at night and chews on it like over and over again. I hope that like Jan is still sleepless, which I know he is. Like he still every day comes in like with a frown on his face after first stand. So that's what I want to have happen.
Did you actually dive into the rule book and see like what the last iterations of tiebreakers were?
I knew what they were. I've done like League Ops before, Comp Ops, so I read it beforehand. Yeah. And it's like, you know, head to head directly if it's one on one, then head to head within the groups of the tiebreakers team, then head to head outside of the tiebreakers teams, and then the circuit outside of it, and then it's win time. So like I know what it is always, and win time.
And what
always
is after win time?
What is it after win time? I actually don't know what it is after win time. Has anyone ever drawn on win time?
Coin toss.
It's a coin toss. You coin flip the entire tournament. When I read that, I'm imagine like, the chances of everyone having the same game time is crazy. But can you imagine if we had an official international where everyone placed 2-2 and had equal game times and they just decided everything? They just had like 50 coin tosses and they're like, all right, you get first, you get last. All right, Honor Life, you're going home. CFO, you're
that's
number
what I was
one.
Say. The only thing I will tell you about that coin toss is in no version of the coin toss did Hanwha go out on the coin toss.
Yeah, okay,
all right. The coin toss would still be happening now, even if you had the most broken coin in the world.
Jesus. Yeah, no, I mean, it was crazy to read that stuff with First Stand. One thing to talk about with First Stand is obviously that you had to leave in the middle of the tournament. And I think that also gave, like, power to the narrative that you're, well, not even narrative, but just what people believe, that you're just so important to the team, because it was like, wow, you're beating KC, the team looks good, then you leave, and then like the shit hits the fan and we see like just a mentally destroyed version of TL. Mm-hmm. So what can you tell us about, like, you know, why you had to leave so abruptly, and then also what happened, you know, with your team afterwards? Was it really just that loss to TS, or is there also some stuff that you're not able to really recover when you're working remote?
Yeah, potentially. Like, so what happened is very basic. Like, there are a couple of commitments that I've missed over. So it's like hard for people to understand, but I've been in esports now since 2014 full time. And being in esports, there are some things you miss, like just straight up. Like, for example, my son was born in October 25th. Where of the year I took the job from Team Liquid. I took the job like the literally 2 days after Henry was born. And I was gone during COVID from January 1st. So like October 25th to January 1st is not that long to enjoy your son. And I was gone, and Australia closed borders and I got locked out of the country for like 9 months of that year. So in my son's first year of life, I saw him for maybe 2.5 or 3 months, which is like really, really rough. And the reason you do it as a new dad, and, you know, the reason people do it in general, is like financially, there's a big motivator to set your family up for life. And then, you know, before, when I won Academy a couple of years ago, I was going to take the LCS head coach job. It was offered to me. Then my mum died, like just unexpectedly. I got a bad feeling in my stomach one morning. I flew up to Queensland. My mum passed away like 5 days later. And I was like, Dodo, I can't take the job. I'm going to do a shit job of taking this job. And then I did take the job, and I think I did a good job of it. And I sat down with my family afterwards, and I was like, okay, we're at the top of the pile. Team Liquid to me with C9, I've always said this, Team Liquid and C9 are the only two companies I would work for in the LTA. We're at the top of the pile. I'm one of two of the best orgs. Steve's looked after me for a really long time, and we've won everything. I committed to a promise to Steve that I would give him another championship. I've given him two now. So I feel like I've done my job. And I think I'm ready to step away and spend some more time with my family. And that was my intention. And so I went to Steve and Dodo and I said, hey, I don't know if there's another job for me at Team Liquid. I don't know if there's another job for me in esports that you could recommend, but I can't commit 9 months, 10 months of my life to being a head coach anymore. I've got a son with autism. I've got a loving partner that sacrificed the last 7-8 years of her career to allow me to do this. I need to step away. I need more time in Australia. And they said, how long do you need in Australia? I said, well, I can probably travel for like 4 or 5 months of the year. And they're like, that's enough. Get another coach. We'll invest in you. Get another coach, bring him in an interim head coach position. Someone you trust, someone that you know you can work with, someone you know you can have hard conversations with. That'll be fine. And I said, okay. And there's also a list of things that I can't miss this year. And, you know, there was a date in March that I didn't want to miss. So the players and the staff and everyone knew from the outset. And, you know, last year I missed the first 2 weeks of the MSI boot camp. It just wasn't talked about. Last year I missed the first 2 weeks of Split 2. It just wasn't talked about. Like, if you look at those times, Rainover is the only coach on stage for the first 2 weeks of Split 2. When we played FlyQuest and beat them, Rainover was the only coach on stage. So if anything, we've done a better job of it this year than we had done last year. But it's just much more public, I think, this year, because for whatever reason, like, it's deliberate. I have become the spokesperson of Team Liquid League of Legends, as opposed to Steve, who was always the spokesperson beforehand. So people just notice my absence more, but it has been there in the past. In saying that, I'm not delusional. I know the absence of a head coach impacts their team. I do everything I can to mitigate that. I make sure that I have empowered my coaches, empowered Core as a captain of the team to do what I do when I'm not there. Impact steps up huge when I'm not there as well and starts doing a little bit of what I do. But yeah, you're right. There was probably some conversations that were happening at first stand that would have been way more effective if their head coach was in the room. I let my team down in that regard. It sucks. The timing was really, really bad. But, you know, at a certain point as a man, you know, there's more to me than being Spawn. You know, I am Jake Tiberi, father, partner, everything else. So I do also need to prioritize that at some point in my life as well. I'm not getting younger.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, there's like nothing else. Like, I thought about myself, I'm like, damn, that sounds really good. But it's like, no, this is pretty much all I have. So if this goes fucking bad, like, I'm just going to fucking end my life or something in game, obviously. Like, I'm just like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, bro. Like, I'm like, yeah, there is more to me than this. Like, I am Christian Rivera. Nah, no one even calls me that shit anymore. It's fucking over if this shit goes left. So I just wanted to, I was just thinking about it. I'm like, damn, bro. Like, I feel the same way. And then I tried to like play the angle. I'm like, wait, like maybe when I get older, I'll think like this. I'm like, no, I'm just like, well, I'm older than Spawn. So yeah, it's just completely fucking cooked. Crazy.
Gilius is so right. I need to loop you in, Spawn, because Gilius always says, he says, Dom, I want to become an uncle. You need to have children with your girlfriend.
Gilius pressures me to have kids like very frequently on stream and off stream. Like he's like, hey, Dom, I think it's time.
You need to make babies, Dom.
You'd be a great dad, Dom. You'd be a great dad. I don't want to overstep, but you'd be a great dad.
I hope so, man. I hope so. Like, I mean, it's something that you know, down the line, we're considering. Probably not too far down the line, but yeah, it's just funny to just hear how mature you sound, man. Like Jesus, like it's impressive. Like, yeah, your motto as well. You know, maybe I'm just immature. Maybe, you know what? Actually, like, fuck this. Like, maybe I'm just fucking way behind on my life. Jesus Christ.
Whatever. No, I don't think so. I think that, like, I mean, I say this to my players all the time as well. There's just levers you pull. And as long as it's working towards your long-term goal, whatever that goal is, and I'm very much live and let live. Like, I'm not saying that people have to agree with my goal, by the way. I'm just telling people that was a conversation that was had behind closed doors. So it's not like I pulled a Swiftie, got into January, and then was like, haha, so long, suckers. I'm not going to be here for half a split one. It's like, no, this was planned out. So, and like, what I will say is your career should be a really important part of your life. Like, if you're listening to this, I'm not understating the value of a career, and I love my job. Like, I tear up when I think about the success that I've been able to have as a kid from Australia and, like, be able to enjoy the life that I've enjoyed. I've been to 5 continents in this year. We're in, like, what, April now? Like, it's crazy to think about. But at the same time, like, my goal now has just shifted. Like, I feel like I've done a lot of the things I wanted to do. I didn't ever cast a world final because Bright told me that Australians can't do that, so that's fine. But I was on the analyst desk for world final. Yeah, I mean, that's what I got told at the time. Maybe I just wasn't that good. I got to be on the analyst desk for a world final. I worked some of the biggest events. I ran a lot of the media stuff. I started my own esports team, and now I've coached on the biggest world stage. I got to shake Koma's hand at MSI after he'd beaten me. So, like, there's not much things left on the bucket list to check off, you know, League of Legends-wise, but there's a hell of a lot to check off as a dad. And then, I mean, especially having a son that needs you the way that Jasper needs me. Like, Henry needs me too, don't get me wrong, but Jasper needs me, and his school suffers when I'm not there. Like, it's different when they're little, you know. As a 3-year-old, they can't even articulate, like, what's going on. But when your son can look you in the eyes and be like, Dad, it's hard to go to school when you're not here. Like, you give me the courage to go to school. Like, stuff like this, then it's very hard to be like, yeah, you know what, fuck this kid. I'm going to go play a game of League of Legends. Like, it's hard.
Yeah.
That was completely understandable.
I'm gonna have a midlife crisis if we keep on talking like this, to be honest. Like,
all right, next question. Let's move on to the next topic.
What's the next topic, Yamato? Please.
I have one. Yeah, like I saw in the video that Team Liquid released your boy Swiffer, but I felt like it's almost you had his hand. Yeah, the way I understood it, it's like as if you controlled him as a puppet. I when he was like shouting at the players, I think it was mid series, the remember specific one. Yeah. I was like, this is Spawn talking, bro. And like, he has coached him. Yes, he's kind of helped him. Let us know how it is to work with Swiffer, and how have you prepared him for, of course, the moments where you are in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, I love Simon. Actually, 2014, he was a mid laner on the team called Chiefs. That was the first team I ever coached. So, you know, Spooks came up to me at the airport, who's now the 100 Thieves coach, and was like, yo, we need some help. Come help us. And that was my first ever. Like, yeah, because I was casting it. And so we're in WA, we're flying back together. And so I got to work with him. And we've been close ever since. What I will say is, like, when I started Order, I started it with Swiffer. So there's a lot of history between us. And I think that for two people to share a head coach title, because he is one of the head coaches of Team Liquid, you need to have so much trust. You need to trust that when shit hits the fan, it's all going to be sorted behind closed doors before any of it gets to players. Because, like, if these guys sense weakness, like, you're just absolutely done. You're going to have, like, a two-party system in a one-party role.
But what happens if, like, the owner of an organization, like, stepped in and, like, replaced one of the players and publicly undermined the coaches? Like, how would that work out with the whole thing that you're talking about with unified fronts and stuff like that?
Yeah, it wouldn't go over great with me, for sure. I would struggle with that. Like, you know, maybe I wouldn't be at the role for very long. But Yeah, so with Swiffer, it's like it's really nice working with him again. And what I will say is that he had a really successful career in Europe, obviously came second in EU Masters and then was able to take a middling SK team to like top of regular season multiple times. But he wanted to know what it felt like to coach like a team that could play on the world stage. We've already given him that experience. So he came in at like pretty humble and like willing to learn. And yeah, I think that one of the lessons he learned straight away is that my team is motivated by passion, I like to call it. And that he need to show a little bit more passion every now and again. Don't get me wrong, he still showed some passion on cameras in EU LCS or LEC. But I think that he's stepped it up a notch and he's getting good at it as well. I'm much more of an appeal to authority kind of person. Like, you know, I'm the dictator, listen to me. He's much more of a guilt them into playing better kind of coach. But I think that when you come from it from two angles of emotion, it works better than one. But he's fun to work with for sure.
Did you hear about Tabe's approach?
What did Tabe do?
So basically, Tabe, he explained to us that he takes out the players for 1v1s, he called them. Yep. He 1v1s the player, and then he said, it basically explains to the player, you don't want money? I'm giving you money. Why don't you play good? I am giving you money. That's like the third approach.
Mm-hmm. I also do that approach, by the way. I say that to my players all the time. Like, we are paid too much money to be this shit at this game. Like, you know, there are some people that don't get paid anything to play this game that are currently beating us. So, you know, we got to step this up.
No, you got to pay our players. You got to pay the Ruddy Sack players. So I can say, don't you want the money? Don't you want the money? Currently, we don't have that problem, bro. The boys are motivated. But.
Yeah, no, I mean... With the Ruddy Sack lineup, the first time I was like, man, like, this is fucking disgusting. Like, how much are you guys worth? And I'm like, well, I know what they were to me. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, like, I can't really complain. Like, shit. Like, like, it is what it is, you know? So it was an interesting
I like that approach. I've also had some other coaches do other approaches. Like, I mean, I don't know what your approach was, Yamato, but I've worked with some coaches that were a big fan of one-on-ones and then getting players to put their opinion out into the ecosystem and then supporting players really heavily and like backing players. So, because they had like I still believe that player to player feedback is the best feedback, but I believe that passionate feedback is a close second. And so, yeah, I've shown a couple of clips lately. Actually, you'll love this, Dom. You know, after the Yun and APA thing, I showed like the Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler fight on the Miami Heat.
And I'm like, is this where Udonis Haslam said he was going to beat his ass? When Udonis Haslam stepped up to Jimmy and said, I'll beat your ass. And they were just fucking flaming each other on the bench. Yeah, that shit hyped me up.
I'm like, culturally, is this team a high performance team? And like, I've got all Koreans and they're like just looking at it like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm like, no, this is what high performance looks like. Like, you know, you need to be passionate about the game. If someone ruins your game, you need to be upset about that. You can't just keep letting these things go, guys. And then I showed the Desmond Bane salty Aldama clip as well the other day where like, like, he's like, you're going to play defense? He's like, what did you say to him? Pushes him. Yeah. And then like, everyone's like, wow, that's terrible. And it's like, no, that's fantastic. This is exactly what you need out of your team. This is like two people going at it to win. And so, yeah, I'm just all about that. And hopefully we get more of those cultural moments that are shown on cameras that people don't lose their mind. By the way, that's why I don't stream scrims. Everyone thinks I don't stream scrims because of strategic advantage. The reason I don't stream scrims is because if players are not comfortable confronting each other about the stuff that is happening in scrims and having these serious conversations, and I know from personal experience, like I said to Core after the thing, the 700 hours or whatever, and people lost their mind. That is like one of the most tame things I've ever said to Core in my life. Like, if some of the stuff that we say to each other in scrims gets out, people would be like, wow, people hate each other.
Canceled.
And then my players would start changing the way they behave. And then we would get worse as a League of Legends team. You know, they would start playing up for cameras. They would like maybe like lessen a blow that they didn't want for Umpty to be heard publicly because he's already under enough scrutiny. Or someone would say something about Impact and, you know, Impact's pride would now be on the line as opposed to it being a learning moment. This stuff just can't happen in competitive sports. So I would do like open days where you get to see what we do, but I will never open a full scrim block where like we're going against C9 and we're getting angry at each other. Because by the way, if we lose to C9 or we lose to FlyQuest, we're furious by the end of the day. You know, we've had a couple of 6-0s against them lately where they've been taking us to town. And it's not like we're all walking out of the office like, It's like some stuff goes down when you get beaten 6-0 by a rival. You know, no one likes that.
I really
100
really,
Thieves, man.
Oh.
100 Thieves have never 6-0'd us, I don't think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think you guys are the only team with FlyQuest for that pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we just got to translate a little bit more, you know?
No, you guys are good at the moment. You had a really successful boot camp. I can tell. Like, there are some teams that you can tell, and they went to Korea, and I was like, ah, oh, that was a lovely holiday. I'm sure they all went and had, like, some nice drinks at some Korean bars. And then there are some teams that come back, and you're like, wow, they have completely changed how they play the game, and they've learned actually some concepts that, like, you know, we can identify. So it's, like, it's nice. I think you guys are going to be awesome. I think, honestly, you guys should probably be the number one power ranked team if people saw what was going on behind the scenes.
I think so too, but we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's like, it's just a whole process. I feel like this is the tough part about being a coach. It's like, man, you just want to play the games now. Like, I just want to fucking get some games and, like, you know, get the stage games and be able to take our learnings and see where we're, you know, falling flat, because we've done a lot of improvement, but it's, it's not the same until you get to actually, like, test it and see, like, how much of that improvement is sticking. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how all that goes. I think so. We were going to shoot for like an hour, 15 minutes, hour 25, but there's one more topic we definitely have to hit.
You guys have got half an hour, by the way. Go nuts. Okay. I'll stay here till scrim stop.
You probably know what topic it is. So recently you did a video. You did a 20 verse one Reddit video. And you said, fuck all co-streamers or something to that regard. Actually, yeah, just kidding. So you said that co-streaming shouldn't exist, which I kind of agree with, to be honest. It feels like a hack, but there was a couple things that I had difference of opinion on. So I guess you could start with your, you know, you could not do my bullshit version of your argument. You can make your actual argument about why you think that you know, co-streaming shouldn't exist, and we can go from there.
So what I said is, I think I said co-streaming is inherently bad for League of Legends, and that was probably a misinterpretation between me and Ben, because I think it's good for League of Legends, the game. It's bad for the Riot Games product of esports. So here we have to state out a couple of goals. So when I worked at Riot, esports was no longer a marketing tool. It was now its own individual product with its own individual P&L, and it was something that was expected to be profitable within the next 4 years of when I was there. And they started closing regions that did not have profitable P&Ls, like the OPL, by the way, guys. I have firsthand experience with this. So what I was saying is, the easiest way to make a product like LTA or like LEC profitable is by having a huge mainstream and driving viewers towards that to be able to sell ad reels, sponsorship, everything else. And that was kind of my argument. Now, what I was trying to champion is kind of the days that Yamato and I were on broadcast. And you were on there at times as well, Dom. Like when you have like ex players like Doublelift, Crepo, these kind of guys joining the analyst desk with Monte Cristo after games, and they're just elevating the shit out of the broadcast. And what I feel like at the moment, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like the broadcast of Riot Games is actually the primary, like, I don't feel like it's the pinnacle anymore. I'm just going to call a spade, and I've had this conversation with other shoutcasters that I've spoken to. I feel like we've lost our way. And I feel like people say, well, it's too corporate, it's too this, it's too that. And it's like, yeah, but all of these things are changeable, guys. If they actually had motivation to change them, they could change it. The OPL was not a formal broadcast. You know, when I watch some of the Brazilian broadcasts, they don't look like formal broadcasts. Like, this can change. I think there is a huge area for someone like Dom to be on an official Riot Games broadcast and be a little bit more uncensored. Like, I hate to break to you, if Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal can be on a halftime, Dom and I can do a halftime. We can clean it up to a Charles Barkley or Shaq level and still be entertaining, talking to each other and have a good time and bring people to the main broadcast.
I mean, it's not that hard to edit my opinions and still get like the joke across. Like, I don't need to, you know, say the shit that I said in this episode, like, and, you know, be like, oh, I'm going to end my life, or say, like, I could change the verbiage to give the same effect like on a broadcast and make it funny for somebody and not, you know, be as extreme. I mean, it's something that I've done before. I was actually there. I think when I first met you was in 2014. This is when you flew over with Atlas to do some, I think promotion relegation.
Yeah,
you did promotion relegation, and I was the like pro player analyst on some of those broadcasts. So yeah, I mean, I think that could definitely be the thing. But the main problem is that Riot has just never seen the value that somebody like myself or, you know, somebody like Cajal could bring to the broadcast. Mm-hmm. And that's obvious based on, you know, what they're willing to pay. I mean, they've lost some of the best talent that has ever worked in esports because they're not willing to pay what, you know, the market value for those people are. Like, for example, Dash, right? Like, Dash was great at his job. He was top tier, you know, like him and Shox are like the goats of analyst desk hosting and, you know, just hosting in general within League of Legends. I mean, maybe you can throw like Caster Jun and people in there, but you get the point. English speaking, they are the people for that. And it just feels like Riot is always trying to like nickel and dime people as opposed to, you know, realizing that there is value. Like, there's a reason why people are able to go on stream and grow enormous brands. There's a reason why Cajal has so many viewers, you know, right now. It's because they're actually providing something that people want to see. And I feel like that was always part of it. I think the part that I disagreed with was because of like the sponsorship angle, because I think that even though the you know, official stream could sell sponsors, for so many years, the sponsors were like massively negative. Like, you heard stories of like sponsors where, you know, you'd have a PC sponsor and the average viewership of an LCS stream would be like 250,000 back in the day. And they would sell like 10 PCs over the course of a year because there was nothing that actually made you want to buy the PC. It just feels like like very fake, you know, like the ad comes on and you're like, all right, time to like go get a drink or something like that. So like the idea that people are like I think you said like Cajal like screech over the ads. Like, I know I think that was the verbiage that was used. And I think that's a place where I actually think that if Riot partnered with co-streamers, we could probably do a better job conversion wise, because one of the biggest things right now is influencer marketing, because people are much more willing to buy something from an influencer than they are from a, you know, corporate looking broadcast. So I think that is one of the angles that they could actually have with co-streamers to sign some type of partnership. Obviously, they could pass like a very small amount or just like a very reduced rate down to the co-streamer and have the co-streamer help with the conversions, because you know co-streamers have the audience that is more willing to spend on things that the co-streamer will direct their audience towards. So I wanted to bring that point up to you and see what you had to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, I tried to have this conversation with Mrs. Chim Chim and I was really upset. Not upset, that's a strong word, but I would have loved Mrs. Chim Chim and my conversation to be first and start on a positive and then move to the screeching. Cause you know, you've done content before, guys. There's a certain amount that you have to put on a screech to actually sell the video, but then you can have a real conversation with a real person at some point. And Mrs. Chim Chim, great co-streamer, and actually raised a lot of these points as well. And my solution to that is, now we're in the situation we're in, I think that is exactly what we should be doing. We should be moving to the best co-streaming model we possibly can move to right now. And I mean, it's no secret, Dom, like, I think I've been like, what, a sub on your channel for like 15-16 months, you can probably check something like that. It's because you put your VODs behind a paywall and I need to watch the LPL, so you know, thank you very much for that.
That's how you get them.
I'm a sub to Cajal stream for 11 months. I just had an 11 month up there, so like I love supporting co-streamers too. 18 months, there you go. So I'm not talking out of my ass, guys. I watch co-streamers. And now we're in a co-stream model. The reason I know that it's an issue is because I engage with the co-streamers more than the main broadcast. I hate to break it to you. When I go back and watch a game of like us playing internationally and I'm watching the VOD and like trying to get some opinions about the game, back in the day, I actually would watch the main broadcast and be like, what did Deficio actually think about our lane swap? Now, there's no way I'm doing that. I'm like booting up the co-stream and I'm like, what did Dom say? What did Cajal say? I'm going through all of this with a fine-tooth comb. That's my job as a coach. So I think that now that we're in the situation we're in, we have some actually kick-ass co-streamers that are really, really good, that everything you're saying is true. It needs to be way more partnered, way more integrated. I would love the actual Riot broadcast to be like, yo, this is a game on. This is a main channel. Subtweet. Hey, if you want this kind of stream, you need to watch it with Cajal. You want this kind of stream and like actually push it, because we need the thing to grow however it grows, right? I'm all about growth. And at the moment, I feel stagnation, if not regression. And I guess that's where my frustration comes from, is I want the ship to be going back in the right direction at the moment. So yeah, you guys can sell sponsorships better because you're more authentic people. I wish the authentic people were on the broadcast. Now where there's not, you need to take the product to the authentic people again. Also, can I just say, if you're a retired pro player, please become a caster. Because like, I think someone else pointed this out to me and I thought it was really weird. And then I thought about it more. And I used to be the statistical anomaly. I was the only color commentator that was not an ex-pro player. Everyone else was an ex-pro player. Now I don't think any of them ex-pro players.
It's like Finn now. Finn is now starting to like be on the broadcast Jack, more. Jack Spectra.
Yeah.
Has started to do some casting for LEC.
So little amount, right, for the amount of great ex-pro players. That should be a genuine career path for an ex-pro player should be to join a Riot broadcast and start building their brand.
100%. Go for it, Yamato.
I just wanted to, like something that I noticed in the conversation. Like, you can add to it, Dom, because I wanted to, same topic, but a different topic within the topic. So you wanted to add on what we just said, Dom?
No, I was just going to just give an example of like when you watch the NBA, almost every team that plays in the NBA, so there's 30 teams, they all have their own personal broadcast, as well as there's like an NBA TV broadcast, and there's like a TNT broadcast, and then there's NBC, you know, just the different channels also have broadcast rights for certain games, etc. And almost every single color commentator, even on the individual broadcasts, is a former pro player. It's almost always a former NBA player alongside, or a former NBA coach alongside one like really practice color commentator for pretty much everyone. And that's like a career path that people are happy to do. And then when you go to inside the NBA, which is their, you know, the TNT analyst desk, so to speak, they have some of the best players that have ever played the game sitting there talking about the game afterwards. And they're just, you know, they're joking around. Sometimes they're not doing the best analysis, whatever, but they're making it an entertaining product. And people just want to listen to what they have to say, because it's like, Shaq is a top 10 player of all time. Like, and he's just talking about the game. Like, he's probably going to say something. He's going to have some perspective that is going to impact me, because he's done it, you know, like he knows what he's doing. And they have lost that on broadcasts. There's just not that level of expertise anymore. The people that have dedicated their life to playing the game for long periods of time are just going to have deeper insight, and I think that's a lot of times what the viewers want, and that's why the most popular co-streamers are former pro players.
I wanted to add on the point of like the comparison to like the traditional broadcast, right, in terms of sports. Obviously, like, sports have done a way better job of just monetizing things, which is like the most important thing in my mind. Like, I think the most powerful emotion to evoke for viewers, right, is most of the time nostalgia, right, or continuity. And I think a very difficult part about esports, right, that you always face is that a lot of teams change, players change. I think for me, a big criticism of what's happening with like the NALCS is that a lot of the legacy teams are no longer like existent, right? It's like the OG fans. Of, for example, the LEC, they are like Fnatic fans, and then they like are G2 fans. Those are like the old school fans.
SK but, fans,
like all of us here, like during when Dom played, like earlier than that, it was like Dignitas is still around, but it's a shell of what it was, right? For sure, because they came and went and whatever. But it's like a
different
DSM,
organization.
PG. TSM, COG, they're gone. The nostalgia factor is like gone, and it's a big pain point. And for me, it's like in esports, it seems to always be the trend where the face of the broadcast outgrows what the actual game is, because people are drawn to things that are continuous. And the disconnect has always been, like, I remember I had this conversation with some casters, because it was like an off season, and I'm not going to mention their names, but basically we had a conversation and I was like, I found out like what people were getting paid. I'm like, what the fuck? How is this even possible? Like, do you realize how much leverage you have? Do you realize how fucking huge of a personality you are for this brand? And this is what the payment is? It's like, you should be paid 10 times what I'm getting paid. Like, that doesn't make any sense, right? And I feel like that's where the disconnect is. I don't know if it's something that you are not, like, if Riot is just not capable of doing so, but at some point, you reach a point where, like, Kadru, he cast the finals. He built up his own fucking stream during this entire time. And then it just reached a point where I don't think that they could compete at all in terms of what he could have made. And then you are staring down the barrel of the question of, oh, are we going to lose this person and he's going to move on to different things and we're going to lose the steam of that? Or are we going to let him co-stream to still, like, pump up our numbers? Because I think that's, like, the main thing that is different from traditional sports is that, like, for example, Dom, you love the Miami Heat. Like, you have history, you know, you have this triggers every point of fucking nostalgia for you, right? In terms of like teams and traditional sports, in terms of what the game is, there's continuity always in everything. It's like your team has history and so forth. But in esports, there's very little continuity in what the game is or like what the teams are. And it's always the personalities, and that's what people are drawn towards. So I feel like that with the comparison, for me, I lose the point of comparison. But the idea of paying people that what they deserve to be on the broadcast, that should happen. Because if they could, they should. But if they can't, well, I don't know what else you do, you know?
It should have happened. Like, there's no way in the past that esports wasn't successful enough. Back when we're talking about the prime of esports, that it wasn't possible to do that because it was definitely big enough back then. Is it possible now? Probably not. And that's why the conversation kind of falls flat on its face, why people get mad at the theoretical. And don't get me wrong, I'm mad at the theoretical too. But yeah, I just wish there was some way that it wasn't the way it was right now. And, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda, didn't. Now we just move forward and we do the best things that we can right now. And, you know, having Cadrel part of the product, having Dom part of the product, having you part of the product is definitely the best thing right now. And who knows, maybe in 2-3 years when I'm done with this coaching thing, I'll be pulling on a headset and being responding to my own videos on stream. That would be great. But I agree. The main takeaway I want to take away from this is that, like, kind of what Dom and Cadrel actually alluded to a little bit is, like, the level of expertise and authority and stuff like that seems to be diminishing in League of Legends, and I want it to be going up. The game is getting older. It's getting more mature. There should be more good people involved in these products to be able to actually elevate them to the highest level possible, and that's what I want to hear. I want to tune into a broadcast, and I want to hear some the smartest person in the room talking about the best esport product, and I just, yeah, that's all it is.
I can see that. And just when your motto was talking about like the continuity, I just had a, I just can give some credence to that with my Miami Heat. So I've been listening. So I became a Miami Heat fan in 1993, 1994. That's when I was like 3-4 years old. I actually learned how to read by reading the sports pages. It was the first sports game I ever went to with my dad. I'd watch every single game. You know, I started like just learning like just even my vocabulary and stuff like that just from the actual broadcast. And the color commentator, his name is Eric Reed. He has been the color commentator, or sorry, the play-by-play caster, play-by-play commentator. He's been the play-by-play since 1988. So since before I was born, it's been the same guy, and he has done every single game outside of maybe if he was sick one day or something like that. But he has been the mainstay play-by-play the entire time that I've been alive. And as somebody who like watches it, it's just I love like just listening to him talk about the game. Like every time somebody hits a three, he always says kaboom, and it's like whenever I hear that, I'm just like, yeah, it's like I just want to watch the game and hear that guy just, you know, commentate and do all that stuff because I'm just so familiar in a way. And it just like it feels good that it's like, oh man, the whole time I've been watching, this guy has been like a diehard Heat fan. He's like been there for the journey, you know. And yeah, I feel like that a lot of that was lost with like different personalities not being in teams anymore. Like Bjergsen, obviously, I think was a huge loss for the NA/TSM, you know, scene. You know, as soon as he left, like the org was pretty much dead a year, 2 years later. You know, like there was no one that cared about that 2023 TSM roster that had like they brought back Hanser and stuff. They're like, one more split Hanser in 2023. And no one cared. Everyone was just like, yeah, this is not a team anymore. This is nowhere similar to the old TSM. Yeah, it is kind of sad the way that everything has gone. Honestly, it made me sad to watch the greatest moment in LCS history video from Esports Garage. This came out like 3 weeks ago. I just watched it today. And I was watching just like TSM versus C9 in this huge stadium. And it just was like so fucking hype. I remember watching that. Like everyone in NA used to just watch that shit. Like I remember I was at TwitchCon Europe in like 2019 and I was hanging out with like people that weren't even really involved with League anymore. And the finals between C9 and TSM were TL and TSM were on, and we watched that at like 11 at night before we went out. We're like, oh, like we gotta watch this shit first. It's like the finals here. And I'm like, dude, it's TL versus TSM. Like you gotta see who wins that. It's like BB's first split. And it just, it feels like part of that is gone. Like when you watch the finals, it's just, it feels kind of soulless compared to before. So it is kind of like sad the direction that we've gone, at least in North America. I mean, there's some hype coming back in Europe because of all the influencer owned teams. But in terms of like North America, it does feel a little bit like bare in a way. I don't know how else to describe it. That's what it is. Yamato, you have anything else before we let Spawn go?
No, I just wanted to ask you both. Like, I heard Whipple saying Fly is the fourth best team. Spawn here, you said that C9 is the best. Give me, like, as someone that is outside of the loop in terms of how your screens are going. So, give me who's going to win the split. Give me some words of war.
That's a different question, Yamato. We are not good right now. But I can tell you, if there's one thing I do very very well, it's get teams in shape before playoffs. So I am really cracking the whip. We are probably third, fourth best team right now, but I am very certain in, what, 7 to 8 weeks when people have to play against us in the final that they are going to at least have a very hard showing. I always say if you're good enough to make a grand final, you're good enough to win a grand final. That's just how it is. The best team on the day wins, not the best team of the split. And I am confident that we will be one of the teams that makes it, so we'll be good enough to win it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I feel the same way. I feel the same way. Like, I actually just, I mean, it's so hard. If Spawn's watched the scrims that I've watched, it's so hard from my perspective to not consider us the best team.
Yeah.
Like, when I see the way our players play, when I see the way our players lane, when I see them improving on the daily and just like getting better, and I'm seeing other teams stagnate, it's like, I just feel like we're on the path, and it's just going to be, it's just going to be about like, can we develop enough of a like repertoire of plays in our playbook that we can beat every other team in North America when the time comes. So I personally still think that the best three teams are, I think it's us, Fly, and then TL right now. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And then 100 Thieves is fourth. I actually think 100 Thieves is like a respectable team, though. I think they're a decent team. I don't think that they're a bad team. I know a lot of people think they're just like brainless monkeys, but brainless monkey gameplay is actually pretty good right now. Like, the way the game is right now, brainless monkey gameplay is good, and they have some solid players. So I would probably just say it would be like us, then Fly, then TL, then 100 Thieves. That's what I think right now. Mm-hmm. But obviously TL won last split, and I thought we were gonna win last split as well, and that didn't happen, and we lost to TL.
Do you know the best thing that Dom is about to figure out as well is, like, Dom's team is at the front of the meta, so they're gonna have to now start defining meta. We did this for a year, and it's so easy to just copy someone's meta, by the way. It's like, you know, I'm just going to sit back. I'll turn on Dom's co-stream, see what he's talking about a little bit, take some notes, and then all of a sudden, we're playing the same way C9 is in 2 weeks. It took him 2 months to be able to do. So have fun with that, Dom. Thanks for doing my homework for me, and we'll just continue to push along.
Yeah, I just don't think that it's like that, because I don't think that other teams' players can do play what the way you guys we play. Do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we fought in lane swaps as well. It was like, you guys can copy the first 5 minutes of our lane swap, then good luck after that.
I mean, even if you guys tried to draft the same way that you draft, it's like, you don't have Thanatos top lane, right? Like, you don't have like that guy who's just going to be playing like these matchups and just like winning top. So, I mean, I'm hyped for LCS, man. I still call it LCS, but I'm hyped for LTA. Like, I really want to see the boys do well.
You know, I was down a little bit, honestly, but Spawn, it's just speaking to you now has gotten me hyped about you guys again, bro. Like, I was upset at times, but now I'm hyped about you again, bro. Like, you just have a way with words, man.
I'm gonna keep doing it to you, Mata.
I feel like it's an abusive relationship, because, like you know, last Worlds, I mean, I think I said this on stream at some point, and I like had some brief conversations with Spawn about like going into like the Chinese teams, like their approach and stuff. So I've like, before I was coaching, I felt partial to TL. I like really wanted to see them do well. But it's like I'm in an abusive relationship, because I like Spawn, but then the way Umpty plays makes me very angry on like a jungle level. Like, he makes me like very upset. So I'm like, look, if we don't go international and you guys go international, I'll be rooting for you guys. But I might also like be a little unhinged in the game.
Both there.
Well, there's only one team this next international, so we'll see who makes it.